"Had I really guessed accurately?" The redness vanished from their eyes, as well as the fog, and they even seemed to shrink several times, turning into mere 2-meter-tall entities of level 300, quite slayable by me as well as Stacy. If it weren't for the horns and wings, they'd look like ordinary Barleona demons. "Who's the Vicegerent?" Anastaria immediately inquired. So I had to waste several moments to tell her about my accidental venture into the Leprosarium, the astral plane for shadow shamans. "Is the work progressing as planned?" Stacy continued, interrogating the demons.
"The breach is ready,"
the demon with the colorful band across his torso answered in an ordinary voice. He seemed to be the leader of this trio.
"Everyone awaits the Keymaster. When will he appear?"
"Soon."
Stacy knew how to bluff much better than I did.
"At the moment, we need to distract the sentient forces to defend their cities. And not only of this continent,"
Stacy nodded over her shoulder in the direction of Calragan,
"all of them."
"The Annihilator won't handle such a load,"
the demon frowned.
"Why, we don't care one bit whether it'll handle the load or not,"
Stacy shrugged.
"I have been issued an order, and I intend on performing it. You'll be the ones who'll have to explain to the Vicegerent why the plan fell through. We're just doing our jobs."
"I don't sense any sacrifices on this ship."
The demon sniffed the air with his nose and pointed at Noom.
"He alone won't suffice to charge the Annihilator."
"The Keymaster sent us in a hurry, so the sacrifices will have to be found on location," I interrupted. "How many of you are there here, anyway?"
"What?"
The demon started back from us, like from holy water. "By the way, does that even have an effect on them?"
"You wish to sacrifice us?"
"Who else? What do you propose?" I hiked an eyebrow expressively. "Where else are we going to find the energy to charge the Annihilator? You were sent to this world with a single goal, to prepare the invasion. The goal has been completed. Now everything depends on the Keymaster. You need to serve the Vicegerent one more time. Surrender your essence to him."
"We shall do the Vicegerent's bidding."
The demons bowed their heads obediently, as if they were... oh, hell.
Scenario updated. Burden of the Creator. You may join the side of Char. The scenario objective will be changed as follows. Prepare the invasion. The current objective will be changed as follows. Deliver the Alabaster Throne to the breach. Do you wish to join Char? Time remaining to make your decision, 7 days.
"Stacy, do you understand what the hell is going on here?" I asked in shock, swiping away the system notification.
"There's nothing to understand. The corporation has decided to roll out a new expansion, an invasion by creatures from a different world. Danny, I knew that I couldn't let you go on your own. How else could I find myself in this kind of thing? Are you going to switch sides?"
"No!"
"That's what I figured. Let's wait to make our choice. Right now, we need to pretend like we're basically ready, but that we still have doubts. The more information we get right now, the better it'll be later."
"So the tomb is the breach point, then?" I guessed.
"That's why the other continent's players showed up. The prophecies. As soon as I created the full chess set, the system issued a quest to keep me from the tomb." I'm afraid it's not that simple.
Stacy shook her head.
We're here. We need to descend.
The demon interrupted our telepathic exchange.
The Annihilator is underwater.
I'll breathe for the two of us,
Stacy assured me, interpreting my agitation accurately. I wasn't much of a swimmer.
I'm a siren, after all.
Noom brought the airship down to the surface. Despite the blizzard, the sea was as placid as a mirror. There wasn't a single wave, to say nothing of a storm. Another infraction of the laws of physics? Or was this the effect of an anomaly? As in, check it out, there's something amiss here. Make sure to study it. The dive took us a long time. The demons did not seem uncomfortable, swimming alongside us like they were dolphins or something. Stacy also felt completely in her element. Turning into her siren form, she moved through the water with the same agility as the demons. I, on the other hand, did not feel so comfortable. If the first 10 meters had posed no difficulty to me, then further on, Barleona's physics kicked in. Stacy would swim over to me and kiss me to supply the oxygen I needed, resetting the submerged timer. But I would immediately start to rise. At one point, everyone got fed up with my struggling. The demons latched onto my feet and began to pull me down. Hello, pressure and the stun debuff. It was only thanks to Stacy that I didn't drown. Even in her siren form, she managed to send a healing shadow into me at the critical moment. Ultimately, though, the downside of the rapid descent became that I came to my senses in an underwater grotto without the slightest idea of how I'd gotten there. It was a good thing that Stacy was beside me, since I definitely had to remember this place.
Armageddon would come in useful here,
Stacy's thoughts sounded in my head. And I had to agree with it entirely. First of all, this cave was enormous. Even though there was plenty of light, the farther side of it was barely discernible. At first glance, the width added up to no less than 700 or 800 paces. There was a light source approximately in the center of the cave, a bright white sun that rippled with bolts of lightning. A portal, from the looks of it. A host of strange demons were sustaining it from the ground, their paws raised beneath it. Demon mages. First time I've heard of demons having a mage class. Considering that any old demon is a mage by default, it's hard to imagine what demons specializing in magic were capable of. Although, maybe it's not that hard. Evidently, they can open and sustain a portal between worlds. The rest of the cave was filled with demons of various shapes and sizes, winged and horned, like our escorts, small and toothy, fat and clumsy, quick and agile. The various demon types vaguely resembled the specific divisions between the classes. Mages, warriors, hunters, rogues. Char offered the same assortment of classes as any other race.
The Annihilator,
the demon pointed at the white sun.
Before we can begin filling it with energy, you have to prove that you've been truly sent by the Keymaster. You shall speak with our leader.
Stacy and I barely had time to exchange glances, unsure of how we would pass this test, when a small demon popped up right before our noses. This fellow barely reached my waist in height, and had neither horns, nor fangs, nor claws. In fact, outwardly, the demon leader looked more like a reddish goblin who'd undergone some minor plastic surgery than a demon.
"Let's see now,"
drawled the demon, and the world around us dissolved into darkness. I lost complete control over my avatar, finding myself in some sort of suspended state. On the one hand, I could still do whatever I liked, yet on the other, my actions had no effect. Various debuffs flashed past my eyes so quickly that I could barely keep track of them. The demon had uttered merely three words, yet the effect was intense. Fighting him would be difficult indeed.
"It's odd that the Keymaster failed to protect you from the voice of the leader. He is well aware of its effects on uninitiated minds,"
the demon who had brought us to the cave remarked with surprise.
"He merely wishes to test us,"
I wheezed, getting to my feet. Once again, I was forced to thank my lucky stars that I hadn't turned off my sensory filter. Judging by Stacy's eyes, that had hurt a great deal.
"To see whether we shall remain loyal to him, knowing what we've committed to. We have no choice but to bear the pain. Such is his will."
"May his will be done, then."
The small demon smirked, flourished his paw, and two amulets appeared in his palm. They bore such a striking resemblance to an item I had seen before that I shook my head, trying to clear my sight. This wasn't possible.
"It is entirely within the spirit of the Keymaster to test his minions again and again,"
the small demon continued once we had donned the amulets.
"I sense your kinship to him. You are blood kin. The blood of the Keymaster flows in your veins. There is no better proof that you've been sent by him. I have been informed of your quest. We are ready. The sacrifice shall be performed immediately."
"Something tells me that Plinto owes us an explanation,"
Stacy muttered aloud when the demons began to hop into the Annihilator one after the other. "Not Plinto," I shook my head, adjusting the tooth of the patriarch. "His father." The cave was rapidly growing empty. The demons were filing into the white sun one after the other, without even uttering a sound as they did so. Excellent warriors. They'd been ordered to die, and so they did. Management knows best. Any attempt to speak to the small demon and pump him for more info turned out unsuccessful. The only help we could get from him was a tutorial on how to activate the Annihilator. All other questions, such as, "And where shall the breach take place? How many demons will enter Barleona? What are the demon's technical specifications?" as well as others, elicited nothing but a smirk. He seemed to have decided that my attempts to gain information from him was just another trial of the Keymaster. And if he talked, then he would be deemed weak, and all of his subsequent incarnations would be as a foot soldier.
"Subsequent incarnations?" I asked, baffled. "Death isn't the end of being for you lot?"
"We are the spawn of Erebus,"
the small demon replied proudly.
"Death is but a step towards unity, and my time has come to take this step. Tell the Keymaster that I have completed my task. It is his turn now. We shall open the door."
Okay. Now I'm completely lost. What the hell is going on? How the devil did the vampire patriarch become the demon keymaster? I asked a rhetorical question once only two sentients remained in the cavern, Stacy and I. The space around us had filled with the roar and buzz of the charged annihilator. The hovering orb had turned a deep red, illuminating the cave with a sinister hue.
Damned if I know. Hug. The people you'll meet. Let's get on with it.
Stacy waved at the annihilator.
It's time to wrap this up.
Without searching the cave? My astonishment knew no bounds.
Are you well, my dear? An army of demons just committed ritual mass suicide, leaving all its gear. What if we get thrown out of here once we launch the device?
No, you can do whatever you like, but I'm gonna take a stroll. Maybe I'll find something useful.
The Altarian Falcon, Scepter of Power. Properties. Complete subjugation of an enemy's mind, up to 1,000 sentient creatures at once. The subjugation of a player is limited to 60 seconds, no more than 10 times an hour. Mind control resistance does not work against the Falcon. Limitation, level 300 plus. Shadow alignment. Warning, the owner of the scepter receives hatred status with the entire world apart from Shadow. Achievement unlocked. Orly, you have reached hatred status with more than 10,000 factions.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's useful, all right,
Stacy said sarcastically after reading the properties. My hopes did not pan out. The demons had hopped into the annihilator with all their gear. The only thing they left behind was the Scepter of Power.
A few minutes ago, only our continent hated you. Now the entire game's out to get us. Fun.
By the way, I recalled Linnea's tale, did you know that the Annihilator is also Carmandon's handiwork? It turns out that our ancient emperor didn't just want to enslave the world, he also wanted to destroy it.
Or enslave it by destroying it,
Stacy added.
He was the servant of the demons, the tarantulas, the patriarch, and who knows who else, all at the same time. Anyone who was powerful enough. What are you going to do with the scepter?
Well, it can't get any worse. I tossed the Altarian Falcon into my bag. Send me the coordinates. Let's get this party started.
Heroes of Malabar, a terrible evil is headed for Anhurs. The Emperor has declared martial law and bids you to assist him. Everyone to the defense of the Empire. Heroes of Cartus, a terrible evil is headed for the Nameless City. Residents of Barleona, the inter-clan tournament has been suspended. All PvP limitations have been lifted. Stop Mayan and Anastaria at all costs.
Welp, they definitely hate us now.
Stacy smiled sadly, sitting down on the sand.
12 years of playing, all to...
Suckertown, I offered. Plinto's suggestion.
Speaking of that rogue,
Stacy dialed an amulet.
Hey, you bloodsucker, are you ready to do the eye?
Always ready, my little serpent, replied the voice on the other side of the amulet. When you vanished, everyone decided something odd was afoot. Not many were aware that castles can teleport. Now, however, tick! The Emperor is demanding that the people return to defend the realm. But no one has the gold for portals. They're stranded here. The castle's gone, after all. You should see this. The PKers have woken up, and they're hungry. And there's a herd of players running around in a panic. Hundreds of thousands. Are you sure you want to do the eye right this instant?
That's right, Stacy said firmly. Gather your warriors.
Already done.
Wait, I managed to jump in before Stacy hung up. The girl looked at me inquisitively, but didn't say anything.
Plinto, head over to Altameda right now, please, and pick up scroll number 1 from the storage vault. It needs to be urgently cast right in the center of that crowd.
Where did you get it?
Stacy asked with astonishment.
They returned all 5 scrolls to me. They revived Guernica, after all, so it was only fair that I get the scrolls back, too. I threw them in storage and forgot about them. Wasn't any reason for it. Until now.
On it, the rogue said happily. Using numbered items, whether they be number 1 or number 2, is my favorite pastime. In this case, we'll have to wait 6 hours to do the eye.
We're going to head over to Altameda during that time. Guernica can't hear us here. I tried to summon the Lord of Shadow to no effect, and realized that this wasn't possible outside of the continent. We'd have to return to Altameda on the gas. That would take us about 5-6 hours. Plinto would manage to respawn by that time.
"What do you need a massive slaughter for?" Stacy asked, once Plinto had set off to perform my orders. "There's a lot of minnows there."
"I couldn't care less. I'll even reimburse them for their lost items," I explained. "But right now, well, just put yourself in their shoes. They've just been pulled out of yet another competition. They're all standing around, buffed up in their best gear, thinking their happiest thoughts. When, wham! Armageddon, baby! Strictly for educational purposes. 'Cause the hell with them!"
"Shadow is affecting you," Stacy shook her head. "You're becoming..."
"Cruel? Cynical? Calculating?"
"Prudent. Everyone who's not with us is against us. And the more we weaken everyone who's against us, the stronger we'll be."
Stacy got out an amulet and called Plinto again.
"What do you want?" the rogue answered, suggesting that he was a bit busy.
"Are you still in Altameda?"
"Yeah."
"Bring a helper with you. Cast 2 scrolls. We need maximum damage."
"Man?"
"Do it. The more of them we kill now, the fewer we'll get under our feet later."
"Aight. I'll bring... By the way, I ran into Lori here. She asked me to tell Man that she couldn't find Commandant in the Greylands. Either he's well hidden, or he's already departed to Erebus, or, well, figure it out for yourself. I'm off to the slaughter."
As soon as we entered the boundaries of the continent, my mailbox exploded. Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of letters came pouring in from all ends of the game world, trying to tell me a single, simple thing. I would die. I was a dead man. I was a very sick person, and Barleona was no place for someone like me. I was forced to set up the male imitator to respond automatically. "Hi, if this is regarding the big bada-boom, please address your complaints straight up your..." I'll admit this wasn't very tactful of me, but I was pretty fed up. In order to protect Altameda as much as possible from the player's ire, I was forced to make a deal with Guernica to locate the castle on his territory.
The castle's coordinates would be listed in the castle's register, so any clan that felt like vandalizing Altamita by way of revenge could find it in a few minutes. I wanted to avoid this, so the Empire of Shadow was the best hideout. Teleportation scrolls could send players to practically any point in the continent, with the exception of several locations, including the Empire of Shadow. So when a quite content Guernica gracefully permitted me to locate Altamita not far from Armard, the capital of his empire, my joy knew no bounds. At least one problem had been solved. Three tanks, seven healers, including Anastaria and me, nine melee fighters, and 11 ranged fighters. Our raid consisted of 30 players of level 250 plus. As we were on our way back from the Annihilator, Stacy demanded an industrial supply of healing and defensive scrolls for the entire raid. I didn't feel like arguing, so I turned my attention to crafting, sending my shadows into the paper instead of my quick spell slots. In just over 2 hours, I managed to create 50 scrolls for each member of my raid, and, it seemed to me, completed my task of preparing the raid party. Like hell. As soon as Guernica teleported me to Altamita, which was already near the Armard walls by that point, Stacy dragged me off to the cartographers. To study! While I was creating the scrolls, my cartography specialization had grown up to 150, which allowed me to level up my scribe specialization to level 3. It didn't seem like much. One level. What's the big deal? But Stacy held a different opinion entirely. 3 levels of this specialization allowed me to create scrolls with a 1,000-point stat limit. When it came to healing scrolls, from now on, they would be 5 times as powerful as before, and everything I'd made to that point was quickly sent to the storage vaults. Stacy simply smiled to my angry rant and told me to get back to work. We decided to speak to the Patriarch after we'd completed the dungeon. Stacy and I figured that the corporation wouldn't have time to set the update in motion at the moment. A new threat, in the form of the deadly fog, demanded that they stay on their toes, keeping the players supplied with arms, which all meant that we had at least another day. As soon as we complete the tarantula quest, we'll go see the Patriarch. Everything in good time.
Message for the player. You have reached Char. Plus 50% chance of finding a valuable item. Plus 20 to experience earned.
That's right! Stacy exclaimed happily. I just remembered why Char sounded familiar to me. This is the Tarantula's world.
Okay, we've reached Spider's world, I muttered. Once activated, the Fleet Hound Paw opened a standard entrance to a dungeon, though really we simply passed into another world. What do we have to do now?
That's a question no one's been able to answer for about 7 years now.
Plinto approached us, examining the red mountain looming over our heads.
It's just a barren planet. Sooner or later, a player will get bored of wandering around here, and he'll head back to Barleona. Or the local mobs will send him back.
The world of the tarantulas, or the demons, or simply Char, the devil knows what the right term is, bore a close resemblance to Mars. Red sand, red stones, red mountains. I got the impression that it was simply painted red. Even the sun, in the middle of the sky, was reddish. It illuminated the lifeless, barren nothingness with a bloody light. I've seen this before, somewhere.
Once upon a time, we spent a week out here, Anastaria said.
We killed everything that moved, but we didn't accomplish much. In the end, we found ourselves outnumbered. There's a contact point with our world somewhere around here. We can use it as a shortcut into the tomb. Only, it's unclear how we can reach it. Maybe we need to activate the eye and... Mayan, what happened?
Step by step, I was moving away from the main group of players. I had the distinct impression that what we had to do next was right here, somewhere nearby at arm's length, and I need only to see it and grab it. In pursuit of this premonition, I began to stray from the raid party, which Anastaria noticed.
Mayan, where are you going? Are you being mind-controlled?
I continued to walk, while a strange association occurred in my mind. Control. A player could be mind-controlled for 60 seconds, 10 times an hour. There would be a cool-down, too. A minute or two. I no longer remembered exactly what it was. In any case, this mind control would be negated by the mighty Patriarch's Tooth, and I had one of these now. The Patriarch's Tooth? How would the High Vampire have 5 fangs? I saw 2 of them in his mouth, and Plinto had another. Stacy and I now had 1 apiece, too. How many more fangs did the demons have? 1, 2, 10? 100? Does the Patriarch give a demon his tooth every time he loses one? Come on. After all, they're demons. Weird demons. They're not like the demons I have known. They're sort of a bit too... intelligent? Take the same old portal demon who runs the portal in Ultimita. All he does is spend his time figuring out a way to make an extra piece of gold. Meanwhile, these red-faced char critters sacrifice themselves at the First Order, without even asking us for proof. All we had to do was prove that we had the Keymaster's blood flowing in our veins. The Keymaster. The Keymaster's blood flows within me. He is my blood brother. But I only have 1 blood brother, and that's Plinto. Even Draco is just a step brother, not blood. So this means that through the rogue, I became kin with the Patriarch, and... No! Blood relation only extends to 2 sentients, the ones who exchanged blood. There can be no other bonds, especially mixed blood, not in Barleona. But that could mean only 1 thing. Blast it all to hell. What to do? Should I try it? You only live once. This is just a game, finally. I returned back to the game. Stacy was standing beside me, anxiously peering into my face and no doubt screaming as loud as she could through our telepathic link, which, as I understood it, didn't work on Char. The other players were clumped up several dozen feet away. They were casting worried glances at the pillar of dust rising on the horizon. Our presence in this world had been noticed, and the first wave of locals was already on its way to meet its triumphant demise. I mean, this was a location designed for level 100s, not level 250s. And there were 30 of us. Stacy, what do players get at level 100?
What's going on, Daniel?
Stacy tried shaking me back into a normal state. It's a good thing that this action is hard to perform in this game. What do players get at level 100? I repeated slowly and deliberately in the hopes that Stacy would realize the gravity of the situation.
When a player climbs up through the levels sequentially, instead of skipping them like you did, Then, at level 100, a forced initiation takes place. Not everyone manages to pick up their profession at level 10, Mayan. Some people get to level 100 without a class profession, and only then get their bonuses.
Then that means that the player is modified at the 100th level? I guessed.
No one modifies anyone. An ordinary ritual takes place, in which the head of the class confers the title on the player. And that's it.
Are the players gathered in one place, or is this done remotely? I went on inquiring. For some reason, this felt important to me. So important that I could safely ignore the pillar of dust growing taller on the horizon.
What the hell do you need to know this for right this instant? Yes, they're brought together in one place, every class separately. The players take a knee, consume a class symbol as if they're absorbing it, and that's it. There's no modification. That's how they get the first class title.
It was like I'd been struck by a lightning bolt. A marker. Players who reach level 100 receive a marker. And moreover, they're all players who've played passively and shown little interest to developing their characters until that point. "Who among you received your first class title through initiation?" I yelled to the raid party. "Raise your hand! This is critical!" Hesitantly, even cautiously, the players began to raise their arms one after the other. A few moments passed, and I was staring at 22 raised hands. 22. 3 more than I needed. For among the 20 players who'd come to char, at least one had to be the head sheep. The rest were the herd. May the players forgive my thoughts.
Okay. You've conducted a survey and determined that a part of the crew played unexceptionally. What now?
Stacy quipped, and immediately started back when I yelled into the air, "I have brought the Keymaster and the Tribute. I seek a pass to see the Vice Garant."
"What the—"
Stacy began to say as a terrifying whisper filled the air around us. "Your tribute has been accepted, shaman." 22 players vanished with their arms still raised. The victims' frames went gray, signifying that the system was now preparing the cursing players to exit the game. The remaining 5 players exchanged glances and whipped out their weapons. So I had no other option but to yell to Plinto and Stacy, "Take them out!" Setting the example, I sent a heavy battle shadow flying into the warrior beside me. He grunted with surprise and collapsed on the ground with 0 HP. Plinto acted reflexively. Even though these were his friends, the order was more important. The remaining 4 tried to resist, but in vain. It took Plinto several swipes of his daggers to leave only 3 living players in the tarantula's world. "Keymaster," I took a knee before Plinto, "you are home."
"Mayan, what the hell?"
the rogue cried, almost upset, when Stacy, mumbling something under her nose, stepped over beside me and also took a knee.
"What is going on?"
"He's not ready yet, shaman." A painfully familiar voice sounded beside me.
Once upon a time, we had run the obstacle course to the sound of this voice. Back then, my sensory filter was off, and I can't say that the recollection was pleasant.
"You are hurrying too much,"
the patriarch went on, approaching his son.
"He has too much light within him yet. He is not ready to lead the invasion.
Only the Vicegerent knows whether he is ready or not. For whatever reason, I had decided that the Patriarch and the Vicegerent were different creatures after all. What did we know about the High Vampire? Only that he was an extremely ancient creature, the son of the first vampire who defeated the Mad Herishes, although I quite liked the latter, actually.
"You have changed, Shaman," the Patriarch said with surprise. "The Mayan I knew would stand up for kindness and justice. The current you... Can you imagine the vast quantity of rage and sadness that was unleashed into the world when the two Armageddons exploded among the unprepared free citizens? Another two or three such explosions, and the breach of Barleona will open on its own."
"The Mayan you knew died in the cataclysm," I interrupted tersely, donning the mask of a villain. "It's a good thing telepathy doesn't work in this world." Stacy's eyes told me that there was a lot she had to tell me, and it was obvious that none of it was positive.
"How did you understand that my son is the Keymaster? I did everything I could to have you suspect me."
At this point, another naughty idea popped into my head. "The prophecy. You know very well what it is about. With all due respect, confusing Plinto with you?"
"What prophecy are you talking about?"
Stacy whispered, unable to control herself.
"Guernica."
The Patriarch seethed with a scowl.
"Only he could have told you. I always knew that trusting that shaman with a piece of the Alabaster Throne was a mistake. But why Plinto? I, too, am the son of the first vampire. The prophecy applies to me as well as to Plinto.
Want to bet whose version is right?" I hiked an eyebrow. "Very well. Be so kind as to recite the entire prophecy, and I will show you the obvious reference to Plinto." The Patriarch froze. His eyes were drilling into me, looking to see whether I was bluffing or whether I really knew the meaning of the ancient prophecy that the Emperor had mentioned back in the Dark Forest. It was back then that I heard,
"So, you finally found yourself a son. Do you not fear the prophecy?"
All of my current behavior was predicated on this single phrase. I was really hoping that Nati hadn't made some mistake. At last, the Patriarch recited loudly,
"Whoever tears out his heart and remains alive shall decide the fate of Barleona. Only the spawn of a High Lord may do so, but only after the strongest of the spirits declare him worthy."
"Aha! And there it is!" I flourished a finger and grinned, frantically searching the text for the clue I needed. To convince the Patriarch, I had to find at least one reference to Plinto, and
even though Plinto is a high vampire, he is a living creature.
Stacy came to my aid. "If there's any reason I love my wife, it's because she always helps me, even when she doesn't know what the hell is going on. I hope everyone can find a woman like that."
"You, Patriarch, are undead. You are not alive by definition. This seems quite evident."
"Evident," the Patriarch echoed bitterly. You are right, Siren. We're talking about my living son here, not about me. Everything really is very evident.
This whole tear-your-heart-out stuff, it's not really my fetish, Plinto reminded us that he was there. I like to keep my heart around, as a reminder of who I am and where I come from.
I get the impression that no one cares,
Stacy replied, still looking at me. Making my best stony face, as if everything was following my script, I stared steadily at the patriarch, who in turn remained staring at Plinto. Only the rogue kept looking from me to the patriarch, unsure of what was going on. What a clown circus! Clown cars, clown noses, clown pies, elephants, and all!
I shall lead you to the vicegerent. He shall decide what to do.
The patriarch nodded, and the red world around us vanished, and returned as a stony cavern. Unlike NPC harbingers, I kept having to enter my blink coordinates, so the habit of recording where I was spatially was automatic. It was no different now. The world was still blurry and coming into focus, and I had already popped open the 3D map that showed my current location on Char. Comparing the coordinates with where we had arrived on this planet, I whistled to myself. We were practically on the other side of the world. If I hadn't committed the sacrifice, it would have taken us several years to get over here. I should mention that the cave we were in was quite interesting. A portal burned bright red in the center. A portal to our world, by the looks of it. Or, more precisely, to the tomb. 1-meter-tall tarantulas stood one alongside the other around the perimeter of the place. A green beam emanated from the head of each tarantula, intersecting and joining with all the other green beams 1 meter above the portal. In this manner, the beams formed a cocoon of sorts, within which hung an iron cage. An old man sat within the cage in a lotus pose. It was the same old man who had granted immortality to Late. It was the creator of Barleona. But even that wasn't the most astounding part. The most shocking thing was the 2-meter-tall tarantula sitting on a terrifying imitation of a throne made of skulls. The properties of this monster were horrible. The progenitor, level not available. The tarantula boss watched us with all 8 of his black, lidless eyes.
Why are they here, slave?
A terrible voice roared in my head, causing a number of debuffs to fall on me at once. I regained consciousness on the floor and, thanks to the tooth, a mere 2 seconds after hearing the question. The progenitor's voice was the stuff of nightmares.
"They have brought the Keymaster, Vicegerent."
The patriarch knelt, and I felt the hair on my nape tremble. I'd never seen the higher vampire genuflect before anyone, even if this was a god?
"The Keymaster must be in Barleona, not here."
I fainted again from the debuffs, for crying out loud. Deciding that I may as well stay sitting, I got comfortable on the floor. The upcoming conversation promised to be a lengthy one, and I didn't feel like falling down every other sentence.
"I brought them here to deliver them to him. It is impossible to do so from Barleona.
This shaman was expelled from the leprosarium. He serves the brothers.
If I felt like doing their quest, I would have headed to Guernica a long time ago. I wasn't about to sit out of the exchange, and as soon as the debuffs disappeared, I began to defend myself. At the moment, he possesses the Alabaster Throne, and...
The Alabaster Throne is not subject to mortals.
To my immense relief, the reply came from the Patriarch instead of the Progenitor.
Guernica possesses a mere replica, a copy, one that enjoys a part of the original's power, but still one that is only a replica.
All the more, I replied, getting up. I wasn't trying to destroy it. I never even considered it. You kicked me out of the leprosarium over nothing. I don't work for the brothers.
Then why did you go there?
Blast it all to hell. Why had I gotten up? Had I felt all-powerful? I needed the aid of the shadows. I went to the leprosarium for help, not to meet the brothers. I didn't even know they were there.
He speaks the truth, Vice-Garant. The Patriarch intervened. There is no deception in his words.
The Progenitor didn't say anything, so I risked it and stood up again. To my surprise, Stacy and Plinto were out cold, as if poison. Only now did I notice that the cave's floor was covered with a short grass, barely visible in the murk. A tiny green drop glistened at the tip of each blade, seething with a stupefying narcotic. Stacy and Plinto weren't paralyzed. They were high.
"Is this the Creator?" I asked the Patriarch while the tarantula was contemplating being and nothingness.
"Or another replica?"
"His soul," replied the vampire. "His body remained in Barleona, but we managed to transport his consciousness here."
"You have not joined Char-"
The tarantula reminded us of his presence, accusing me once more of some crime against his reign.
Like hell.
I have my doubts.
About what?
I'm not sure that you lot are dark enough for me. I need true allies. The entire world opposes me. Together with Guernica, I plan on destroying Barleona, and I don't feel like allying with any old passerby.
"He speaks the truth, Vice-Garant," the Patriarch muttered again. "He has become the enemy of all of Barleona."
"You shall learn the truth, and behold our might. Wake the Keymaster."
I didn't fall. I managed to stay standing. I did it. I had had to lean on the Patriarch, yet I didn't simply collapse as I had earlier. Whoever this Progenitor was, he hadn't managed to drop me. The Patriarch didn't waste time and simply pushed me into the portal. The world around me wavered for a few moments and resolved into another small cave, no less strange than the earlier one. This cave's perimeter was full of dead demons who formed another force cocoon around an iron cage holding the body of the Creator. In this sense, the two caves resembled one another. The difference was elsewhere. Instead of a portal,
The center of this cave was occupied by the alabaster throne, and the throne, in turn, was occupied by an old acquaintance of mine. Anastaria's stunned exclamation sounded beside me as she read the properties of the man. And indeed, if Plinto hadn't told me that Lori had been unable to find the first human emperor amid the Greylands, I too would have been shocked. Carmandant sat in the throne and stared with a mad gaze at the Urgrice cuddled in his arms. Here he was, the first emperor of the humans.
"Stop, man!" yelled a familiar voice.
Guernica had decided to drop in.
"You cannot destroy Barleona. Don't you interfere."
The patriarch stepped between me and Guernica, and yet he hadn't been the one who had spoken. Naughty and the Dark Lord stood shoulder to shoulder with the patriarch, blocking Guernica's path towards Stacy, Plinto, and me.
"The time of reckoning has arrived."
"Come to your senses, O my children."
Iluna and Tartarus appeared behind Guernica's shoulder.
"Just give me a reason."
The walls of the cave shook around us. Back on Char, the tarantula god was carefully following the current confrontation. Carmandant laughed maniacally and began to clap his hands like a child.
"Just like that, the pieces are all in place. But who will make the first move, I ask?"
"Man, do you have any idea what's going on?"
Stacy asked, simultaneously letting me know that our telepathy was back online.
"There's nothing to understand, Siren,"
Carmandant went on giggling.
"The Patriarch, the Emperor, and the Dark Lord are trying to pop Barleona. Pop its very fabric and open a passage for the one true god to pop in. The first god, the tarantula god, the god of Char. And Guernica here is trying to stop them, but poor fellow, he's all alone. And he'll be crushed because Iluna and Tartarus cannot interfere. For if they do, the tarantula god, the first god, will be able to get involved. So, all in all, when you add it all up and take a step back to appreciate it, you're about to witness a slaughter of the innocents.
Not so fast, you mad traitor."
Two old men appeared next to Guernica, a man and an orc.
"I thought you killed them,"
the Emperor of Malabar exclaimed with astonishment.
"It can't be." "But it is, Naughty. Anything's possible in this world,"
the ancient orc replied hoarsely.
"The throne's power is not limitless."
3 versus 3!
Carmandant started clapping again.
"What'll it be, freemies? Come on, and join the party already. By the way, I still haven't chosen a side either. Now, who should I fight with? Let me cogitate. But, Eureka, and, but, of course, minions, defend your ruler!"
The space around us began to vibrate, changing the cave. The walls and the ceiling vanished. We found ourselves in an enormous open area, with Guernica and the old men on the one side facing the Patriarch, the Emperor, the Dark Lord, and several dozen enormous tarantulas on the other. In the center stood the alabaster throne with Carmandant. Iluna and Tartarus stood to the side, looking disconsolate, and near them stood three players, looking astonished.
"I don't have enough pieces," Carmadont went on babbling. "I need more. Slave, heed my summons and appear, you winged nightmare!"